Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Ran into Mayor-elect Lori Lightfoot the other day. Before she went to Washington, you saw that picture with her and, or she and Ivanka. And next week she'll be inaugurated as the new mayor of Chicago, and all of the city will turn out and kiss her hand and sing her praises. There were some of us who were there early, and you were there with her on the Chicago Way when people didn't give her a chance. I'll have to say something about Lori Lightfoot in my Chicago Tribune column, and I've asked her to come on the podcast that started it all. Here's the thing about Mayor-elect Lightfoot. She was leaving a meeting with labor. She was in that caravan, you know, mayor caravan, black SUVs, black sedans, and so forth. And all of a sudden they stop, and she gets out. I didn't know. I thought it was just some other, like, potentate. And all of a sudden I look up, I'm parking my car, and I look up, and there she is walking across the street. And the bodyguards were freaking, and they were running after her. And she said, "Hey, I just wanted to say hi. And I just wanted to say hi back." There's so much on Lori Lightfoot's shoulders now. The future of the city, the future of millions of its people, the dreams and ambitions of those who supported her, the fear and loathing of those who didn't. Which hurts more, the enemies or the friends? We're human and we project. And I guess I'm projecting. So what am I projecting for Lori Lightfoot? Hope. Hope for her and prayer she'll succeed. She'll need it, because if Mayor Lightfoot succeeds, the city succeeds. And Chicago must succeed because of all the people in it. We're opening a new chapter in this city. We had the warlords, the Daleys, the Burns, the Daleys. Rahm Emanuel was just an extension of that, like a Bolton, like a Ramsey Bolton of the Daley family. Just another warlord. Lori Lightfoot's different. She'll need it. She'll need your hope. She'll need your prayers. She'll need a break. She'll need an attitude of the city to give her a break, because see what she's going through. She's playing a dangerous game, and she's all alone out there on the Chicago Way. What does Lori Lightfoot need? She needs people who know the ins and outs of City Hall. And that takes decades. That takes decades to know. And blood and pain and things you lose. It takes decades to learn it right and survive. She needs people she can trust. But she really can't trust anyone, because she's the mayor and mayors are alone. So Mayor-elect Lori Lightfoot, soon to be Mayor Lori Lightfoot, a little piece of advice. Don't make a lot of new friends, Lori. The people who respected you and no one else did, they should count some, but not too much. And those that came after when it was clear that you would win, they're just there to use you. And you should use them. Use their ambition. Leverage their desires to get what you want for the city, but you can't trust them. You'll use them because that too is the game of politics and the Chicago Way. But remember, we cannot be betrayed by our enemies. We can only be betrayed by those we love. My friend Jeff Carlin is here, the executive producer of WGN's Rokon Show with Anna DeVellantis. And I'm John Cass, husband, father, columnist, editorial board member with the Chicago Tribune, and I've got a Mother's Day message. because this is Mother's Day weekend. So what are you going to do? I've got an idea. But right now, you're just going to sit tight. You're going to close your mind and open the... You're going to close your eyes and open your mind and listen. Because we're all trying to teach you something. How to survive here on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
Yes, Mother's Day's coming. And I'm president of a new organization I just made up called Moms Against Mother's Day Brunch Society, MAMS. I know the D and the B, I don't know what to do. It just looked better, you know, on paper, MAMS. And I'm going to make an important announcement about Mother's Day brunch. But first I want to kind of let you in on how the column works. People ask, where do you get the ideas to do this and that and the other thing? It was an piece of art on the internet that I'd found a long time ago when doing a column about jesters. There's a painting by an unknown artist from the 15th century out of the Flemish school. There's a painting of a jester. He's wearing yellow, and he's got a leathery hat on with donkey ears or rabbit ears. For some reason, he's covering his face with his left hand, but you can see his eye and his mouth, and he's laughing, kind of laughing. He's actually giving himself the mutzah, but there's a look on his face, a look of hysteria and laughter, which is the release of hysteria, obviously, to those of you who've thought about it, and a release of tension and fear and all that. And there's a look of self-awareness and loathing, self-loathing on that jester's face. Or maybe I'm just projecting, but he got me to think about the people in Washington over this Robert Mueller thing and the faking of public sincerity and the screaming and the fear that's evident all over Washington. There's no need to fake the fear. It shows itself on the faces of intriguers in Washington as it would have showed itself on the faces of macaques in a laboratory or on that 15th century jester in a painting. We're all primates. The lips curl back. There is an understanding, witless perhaps, of threat, the showing of gums and of teeth. And I kept thinking of that jester as I thought of some of my colleagues in the Washington Press Corps and Democrats on the Hill, John Brennan and Clapper, who lied to Congress many times, and others who've been trading in the game of portraying Donald Trump as president and also as tool or swilling servant of Vladimir Putin, the dictator of Russia. I've said what I said in the column, but what I didn't say is this. I wouldn't care if it's a Democrat or a Republican president. As a matter of fact, I think those of you who are pretty wise know that I really don't think much of President Trump. I don't like the man. I wouldn't want to be his neighbor. If I had the Clintons, Hillary Clinton on one side and Richard Blumenthal across the street and Donald Trump on my right, Mitch McConnell is a neighbor, you know, the fence neighbor behind me, I'd move to Indiana immediately. I'd move to Indiana and live in my tiny house and stay the hell away from them because, well, they're political. I don't like it. I don't want to be around it. And more importantly, what's happened to Trump will happen to a Democrat, someone that maybe some of you on the left would say is your president, because this one obviously isn't your president. You keep telling me that. He's not my president. Not my president. What worries me is when it happens to your president, whatever that means. When you use the federal authority, the federal hammer, the intelligence agencies to spy and set up political opponents. That's what may be happening here. That's what we have to find out. Trashing William Barr isn't going to give you information that we need. What happens if the next president is spied on by Donald Trump's administration? I mean, it's almost like a political thing right out of Chicago. You know, you can think of it Chicago way, some mayor, say, in the past. You know, like, let's talk about legendary or past mayors, maybe dead. Some mayor in a pinstripe suit calls his chief of detectives, who may be an outfit stooge. And somebody gets to that chief of detectives. It's not the mayor himself, but someone. And says, I need to be rid of this accursed priest. And so they put a case on somebody, or they light him up, or they take photographs of him with whores or something and destroy that opponent. That's what it kind of feels like that. And I don't want it to happen to the next liberal Democrat any more than I want it to happen to a conservative Republican. Because when that happens, and if it did, and I want to be sure, and we want to know, not just hear speculation on TV and in the punditry, but I want to know as a fact, like a report. And Barr will make a report, and Inspector General Horowitz will make a report, and then we'll see. And then we'll see, because that's the true sunshine we need. If these agencies are perverted to be used against the will of the people who voted, then we're in a bad place. We're in a place that's close to civil war. You don't want to think about it? Okay, don't. Put your head in the sand. But when people lose complete faith in their government and think the government is conspiring against them, they're on the verge of not listening to that government and fighting it. Now the Democrats, of course, are exacerbating it. You know, there's that argument, specious though it may be, about voter suppression. Republicans are suppressing minority voters. At least that's what some of them say. Of course, the facts, as reported by the Wall Street Journal just last week, suggest otherwise or say otherwise. But don't let facts get in the way of your revolution. When they take over, what? We're going to be Venezuela too? Right now, the temptation of many of you, or maybe not many of you, but of many, is to damn William Barr and peel the skin off him, dishonor him, discredit him, and scream at him. Because they don't want to know what's coming. And they don't want that flash of insight and self-loathing and recognition, as in that painting of the jester with the leather donkey hat in the Flemish school by an unknown artist. In Washington, they don't call it fear. They pretend, rather, that is the anger of the righteous, but it is fear just the same. That treacly Washington bureaucratic and political fear. It belongs to the intriguer. It is the fear of finally being found out, discovered, losing one's place in the hive, at the salon, a fear not only of the loss of reputation, but the loss of income and status and power. It is the fear of ridicule, the fear of the loss of face, It is the same fear that was felt in Rome and later in France, just about the time of the guillotine. And now they're feeling it in Washington. The man who's causing it all is Attorney General William Barr. And just wait. Before you pull his skin off, just wait. See what the IG report, see what IG Horowitz has to say. And see what William Barr has to say. And remember, what you do to one side, you can do to the other side. And if it gets like that and we've completely lost our way, we're in trouble as a republic. I guess the hope is it's just going to be isolated. It'll be called the sins of a few bad actors, and they will be lit up on a pyre high above the people, and you'll hear their screams as the smoke rises. And they'll be burned for it eventually. They know it. And all those around them know it. And they're terrified, like that jester in that painting, his hand covering his face, but you can see the eye and the teeth and the gums.
When I was a lad, I was gloomy and sad as I was from the day I was born. When other babes giggled and gurgled and wiggled, I proudly was loudly forlorn. My friends and my family looked at me clammily, thought there was something amiss. When others found various antics hilarious, all I could manage was this. Oh, this, oh, this, oh, this. My father, he shouted, he needs to be clouded. His teeth on a wreath, I'll hand him. My mother, she cried as she rushed to my side. You're a brute and you don't understand him. So they sent for a witch with a terrible twitch to ask how my future impressed her. She took one look at me and cried, what else could he be but a jester? A jester? A jester? A funny idea, a jester. No butcher, no baker, no candlestick maker, and me with the look of a fine undertaker impressed her as a jester? But where could I learn any comical turn? It was not in a book on the shelf. No teacher to take me to mold me and make me a merry man, fool, or an elf. But I'm proud to recall that in no time at all, with no other recourses but my own resources, with firm application and determination, I made a fool of myself.
Now, earlier I told you that I am a president of a new organization, Moms Against Mother's Day Brunch Society. D and the B are silent. And yes, I'm not a mom. But you know what? I have taken mothers to brunch on Mother's Day. And if you foolishly insist upon taking your mother or wife out to brunch on Mother's Day, do us all a favor. First, walk out onto your front lawn alone, kneel down, grab a few handfuls of grass, I'd say three or four, and put those handfuls of grass in your pockets, and take a garbage bag and fill it with more grass. You'll need it, and make sure it's, throw in some moist paper towels because you don't want it to get too dry. And then drive to your fancy brunch place for Mother's Day. And just before you enter, put two handfuls of sod in your mouth. Start chewing, and then pass that extra grass to your family. And insist they chew it too. Particularly, you know, not only the kids, but also like your brother and your sister, and make sure mom and your wife, if your wife's being honored with Mother's Day, and make sure your mom also chews some grass. And chew that good. Grind it down. You know, mash that grass with the teeth, with the molars, you know. That's what they're designed for eating grass. And then after you've had a few swallows of that and that you can taste the grass on the back of your teeth, walk up to the restaurant host or hostess, and just when she tells you or he tells you that it'll be an hour and a half for your table, even though you made a reservation days and days ago, just repeat the following after me. Bah! Bah! You know why? Here's why. If you go out for brunch on Mother's Day, all you're saying to yourself is, I'm livestock being herded halfway to hell. How long are you going to wait for a table? Oh, maybe an eternity plus maybe another eternity. I don't know. Talk to Jeff Carlin about whether you can add eternity together in an equation. And watch the other livestock you're sitting with. Your fellow cows will argue they've been waiting for an hour and why isn't their table for seven? And the sheep will scream and stampede in the holding pen and stubbornly make for the corner booth and the wait staff will chase them with cattle prods. No, no, no. It's not. That's not your table. That's not your table. Do nothing. Just sit there. Chew your cud. Relax. The moms around you are going to be upset because they had to hurry to get the kids ready. Now the kids are hungry, and of course, when kids are hungry, they sweat and they fidget, especially boys. Oh my God, boys are such fidgety creatures. Girls will just sit there calmly and icily dissect their father and mother with words like, oh, good planning, Mom, or something like that. But the boys, they'll just be sweating and punching each other in the arm, and your wife will grit her teeth into a hard smile. She'll be by herself on the end of the lonely waiting bench in that purgatory where you wait for a table you should have had an hour ago. And you know what your wife will say? She'll say, Happy Mother's Day. She'll be saying it to no one. She'll say it to herself. She'll look up and you'll catch eyes and she won't even smile. And there are other strange kids. There's barbarians from the steppe. They'll run and shriek through the restaurant like the Dothraki horse herds of yore. And dads are going to go to the bar and gulp Bloody Marys. And when you're finally seated, what do you get? Food that tastes as if it came from a trough. And I don't care how expensive it is. I don't care how expensive it is. It's Mother's Day. They're shoveling at you. You know this, right? So why were you too stupid to listen to what I had to say? And you went to Mother's Day brunch anyway. You're the one who had to go to Mother's Day brunch. The server can't look you in the eye. They want you to finish in 20 minutes. And you know what? If you think you're going to order the Dutch apple baby, the one that takes 40 minutes to cook, they'll give you a look and say, no Dutch apple baby cake today, baby. They want you out of there. They're turning tables. This is about making money. You have a completely negative outlook, Mr. Cass. I can hear some of you saying that right now. But it's true. So here's what you do. Make Mother's Day at home. You know what? And say you don't want to do it at your house and you don't want to do it at your in-law's house. You don't want to do it at your mom's house. Well, then rent a house for the day. Come on. Do it at home. Don't go to a fancy hotel. There's nothing like, I mean, like you could go to the Hayes Adam Hotel in Washington across the street from the White House, one of the most elegant hotels that I've stayed in my life back in the days when the Tribune did have expense accounts. And I will tell you, it is a wonderful, wonderful brunch and a wonderful place. Beautiful rooms. I mean, it's like 17th century. Gorgeous. Pastels and the salmon mousse is excellent. But you know what? I wouldn't go there on Mother's Day. What are you, crazy? Here's what you do. You go home. You cook an omelet. You go get a coffee cake from Weber's, from Kirschbaum's, from Peachex, from Racine Bakery. Get a couple dozen bacon buns. And think of me while you're eating them because I certainly can't eat them anymore. But at least enjoy them. And sit around and somebody get a movie, you know, like, and I'm not talking about Game of Thrones. That's later once you got mom out because you can't watch Game of Thrones with your mom anyway. You get her out of the room to watch Game of Thrones just in case there's wanton breasts or sex or something. The movies I'm talking about, videos, are when your kids were small or born. Or when you were small and little with your dad, when your dad was around and your mom was young. Those home videos, home movies. Watch those. And laugh and tell stories and everyone's going to talk and scream and tell their own stories. And the kids will tell their stories. And they'll be excited because you're excited and you're not rushed and you're not stuck together like cattle. At the Mother's Day brunch. And maybe sometime during that moment, during that day when you have her at home and your wife and you're talking, those of us who were born can look at our moms and say, "Mom, thanks for my life. Thanks for letting me live. Thanks for not aborting me, Mother. Thanks for giving me a chance in this." To feel earth under my feet and look up at the sky and see green on a tree and the wind on my face. Millions and millions and millions of children don't feel that because it was taken away from them, because they're not alive, because they were ended. But your mom kept you alive. Your mom gave you life. It's time to thank her. And you don't do it by stressing her out over brunch. Take the time. Learn how to make a biscuit. There's video. Just do it. Happy Mother's Day. For Jeff Carlin, executive producer of the WGN show Rokan with Anna DeVellantis, the best producer in all of radio. And for that unknown Flemish painter who painted the portrait of the laughing jester, really a weeping jester, kind of laughing, kind of weeping, a jester on the verge of hysterics, like so many jesters. For all the moms out there on Mother's Day who gave life to their children and are to be revered and thanked for that, if nothing else, just for that. And for me, John Cass, husband, father, columnist of the Chicago Tribune, this has been the Chicago Way on WGN+.